The reality for many of you is that investment properties where you live have become absolutely unaffordable. The good news is that there are many cities with affordable properties and many of those under 100K. If you're someone who's ready to buy your first out-of-state property in the next 4 months, then I encourage you to check out my free training that'll break down the process and show you exactly what it takes to invest out of state. I purchased properties out of state and it's changed my life. The same is possible for you. You simply need the right information. My free training will help you take that next step towards buying your first out-of-state property. You can watch the training right now at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode. Again, you can find it at outofstatemoney.com, or you can click the link in the description of this episode.
Excuse me, may I talk to you for a second?
Yes. This is the Black Real Estate Dialogue, and the purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Welcome back to the Black Real Estate Dialogue and today's Closing Day Features, episode 121 with Kevin Phillip, who's going to be talking about what it's like to creatively invest in real estate and be a property manager for your properties if needed. He and his wife have a great story, and so we want you to tune in and check out what he has to say about how to creatively invest in real estate and also be a property manager if needed. So episode 121, the Black Real Estate Dialogue featuring Kevin Phillip. Let's get into it.
We're living in times where people are trying to save every penny they can get, right? And so how do you get a good flow of applicants and get people to go with your unit? I know you mentioned they're typically nicer than comparable units. Is that the main thing, or are there other things you do that you feel set your units apart and where someone would be willing to pay a little bit more than market?
So I generally gut units when I go in. I tear it down to the bone, new plumbing, new everything in there is brand new. And so what I've done is I've mitigated issues. When people walk in, a lot of time the curiosity is, why is his more than everybody else's? And a lot of the stuff they can't see, the behind the walls thing, right? Nobody will know I tore all the plumbing. Nobody will know I ran all the electrical. Like they'll never know that. But when they walk in the unit, the AC's on, they see stainless steel appliances, they see granite countertops, they're like, this is nice, right? The guy down the street, he's not doing granite countertops. He's doing Formica, right? His cabinets aren't, you know, modern style with, you know, I do sometimes white and gray or combination one each or just one solid color dependent. So when they walk in, it sells itself. My last apartment, I was in Dallas for a while with my family. So we just moved to, and I couldn't show it. And I had over 100 inquiries on that unit. People wanted to see it, and I literally couldn't show it.
Wow. 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 Love it. Love it. All right. So you got rid of the terrible property manager. You took matters into your own hands and started turning things around. Where did things go from there? How did your real estate journey evolve from that point?
Okay. So we had those two units. At that time, I was pretty hands-off. It was just kind of everything was just kind of happening. I was paying people to do everything. It was actually smooth sailing. I started reading a lot more, like self-education, right? So I think I read, I got to give a shout out to the book, The Richest Man in Babylon. Everybody I meet, I tell them, read that book. It's life-changing, right? And then I read a lot of Kiyosaki, you know, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, the basics, right? And so I went in there, I read these books and I say, you know, hey, we're investing in our TSPs. Like we have all this money sitting in our TSP and like, it's never going to hit $1 million. Like it's just never will. Right. I mean, you could Google TSP millionaires and stuff like that, but those people deliberately put most, like they max out every year and we still got to live. So it just wasn't realistic for us anyway. So what we did was we took a TSP loan. So we took a loan against our TSP.
What's a TSP, by the way?
Thrift Savings Plan. It's a retirement plan.
Got it. Okay.
And so we took a TSP loan each. My wife and I each we took a loan, and then we did something kind of different, right? So it was my I got to give a credit to my wife. I thought she was just trying to stab me in the back. I was like, oh man, she's trying to leave me, right? But I got to give her credit because what she said was, she said, hey, what we're going to do is we're going to apply for these properties individually, not as a team, not together. What we're going to do is I'm going to buy one. I'm going to use both our incomes. You're going to buy one. You're going to use both our incomes. So to qualify us for more. So we did that, and we were able to buy two units. At the time, we met a realtor, and I still have the same realtor to this day. She's amazing. And she helped us get two units. So we both bought single family homes. At that time, I was doing a lot of research. And I really wanted a duplex. Like, I just really wanted, I was like, hey man, I've done the research. It doesn't make sense to buy a single family home. The single family home I bought at that time was actually, it had a detached garage. And my plan was, okay, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna buy this and I'm gonna convert the detached garage into a rental space. That way I get my two units. Unfortunately, was unable to do that because of where the garage sat in comparison to the house. But yeah.
So we bought
those two units, minor fixes. They were in decent shape. We're able to get them both rented in less than 30 days. And we immediately started making money. So wow. We're at four units at that point.
Got it. And were those two in El Paso?
Yeah. So we're both in the military. And so our goals always stick together. So we always went overseas and then we came back there because it was just a place we could both go with ease. It's a place where people aren't fighting to go, right? Everyone wants to go to Hawaii. Everyone wants to go, like, you know, Washington. Everybody trying to go to those nice places. And I'm like, hey, can I get to El Paso? And they're like, yeah, sure. Like, okay, dummy. Right. Yeah. So yeah, that's how it worked.
Got it. So at that point, are you working with a property manager? Are you kind of just doing it yourself and paying people to
do
different things?
We're still self-managing. At that point, I'm pretty handy. So at that point, we kind of made a decision like, hey, to get the most of our money, we need to be a little more hands-on. And everything says, you know, don't touch it, you know, pay somebody. But then you look at you're making a couple hundred bucks here and there, and you're like, I don't want to spend it back right there. It kind of defeats the purpose, right? And so, no, at that point, I was doing like most of my maintenance and stuff like that. Everything was a one-man show.
Let's spend some time on that. I'm glad that you mentioned that. So a lot of people are like, oh, well, you know, if you're self-managing, you have another job. You should outsource to a property manager because you should value your time and all those things. What are your thoughts on that? Because you've had both experiences. So tell me about why you choose to self-manage.
I think I did the math one day when a property manager pays for itself. And I think I read the book on managing apartment properties. And what they spoke about is 60 units. When a property manager becomes worthwhile, you have to be at 60 units. So although people say like, it's a job and stuff like that, a lot of times, you know, when I would tell people like I self-manage because like it's easy, right? I put quality tenants in there, so I minimize my calls. I also use a program where I get work orders. Nobody calls my phone in the middle of the night, right? I mean, you could try, but it's not going to ring, right? So everything is done through the work order process. I look at the work orders and then I determine emergency or not. And I'll be super honest with you. When I started, everything was emergency, right? A pipe broke. We got to get somebody out there. This happened. We got to get somebody out there, right? And then I start paying those emergency fees. And so some of the money you're making, it goes right back into like those emergency funds. And you're like, man, now we don't do so many emergencies. A pipe breaks. Unfortunately, we're going to cut the water off. We'll get a plumber for you in the morning. We'll take care of that. Water heater breaks. Hey, I understand what you're saying. We're going to cut the water off. We're going to put them out there in the morning. And you're saving like $1,000 just by doing that. Wow. And it might be a small inconvenience, but, you know, it's not going to affect the tenant that much.
Got it. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that because I think it's important to have people on the show who do both, right? Or who have had both experiences. But I you know, it's just interesting hearing the different points of view. So I'm glad you shared yours. And, you know, quite frankly, unless the property is just a dump, you're probably not going to get that many calls, if any. I mean, you can easily go months without getting any calls, right? Especially
I go years without calls.
Right. Like, especially honestly, if it's in good shape, you know?
Yeah. I have a property, I tend to been there 5 years and I haven't gotten one call, and I go and I check them every now and then. I get anything good and like, oh no, it's minor stuff or anything, we fix it, you know. And they're older couple. And so like with them, it was actually kind of harder when I had to start raising their rents. Cause it's like, man, they never call, you know. But at the same time, they were way under market rents and we had to be realistic. And that's when we switched our motto to like, hey, we're gonna be a little higher than everyone else. But yeah, man. Yeah, I believe in self-management. It's worked for me. And I continue to do it.
Definitely. Definitely. Awesome. Awesome. So how did things continue to grow? So you got those two units in a very creative way, which I think people should write down. You took a loan against your retirement plan. It's not professional advice, but it's something you want to consider. And you got those two units. And once those were established, like, what were your thoughts then? Did you go using the same method? Did you pick up some other methods of acquiring properties? What happened next?
So we had those two units, those four units at that time. And my realtor calls me about almost exactly a year later. And she says, "Hey, Kevin, I got a deal for you." And I was like, "Oh, what is it?" She says, "It's a duplex." She's like, "I know you really wanted one. I know I couldn't get one for you, but this is a duplex." And I was like, "Hey, man, you know, it was just like, we just spent a ton of money last year. Or, you know, we're just trying to recoup." She's like, "I tell you what, it's an off-market deal. Come look at it. If you don't want it, I'll put it on the market. No loss to you." So I said, okay. So I literally, we go look at it. I immediately fall in love. This thing had screamed distress all over it. It was, unfortunately, a mom had passed away. And her kids were just so in distraught. They could not deal with it. So they just abandoned the house. They had to pay taxes on it. They hadn't dealt with it in any kind of way. And so it sat for about like 4 or 5 years. It sat vacant. And it was just too good to be true for me. You know, that's an unfortunate situation. And I say, you know, I was like, "Man, you know, what did it want for this?" And she's like, "Guess." And I was like, "100, you know, and any bet 100, like, I was like, I'll buy it. I'll figure it out, you know?" And she says, they want 58. I think it was like some odd number. Like, they want 58,000. I said, you know, I looked at my wife. I said, "Hey, we'll take it, you know?" And she said, "Are you sure?" I was like, "Yeah, we'll take it." She's like, "Yeah." And my wife's on board. And so we pulled some money from our savings. We took a personal loan. I love personal loans, by the way. We took a personal loan and then we bought it cash. We also took enough to we could rehab it. So we rehabbed it. And I think right now each unit rents for, the two bedroom side rents for about 1,100, and with the one bedroom rents for about 900. So it does pretty decent. You know, not bad at all. And I think our payment on that loan was like $600 or something like that. So it's like a no-brainer.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Remember to follow us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue. And be sure to leave us 5 stars and a review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Until next time.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.